Since February, a team of five reporters has been investigating the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. We were able to do that thanks to the efforts of Jenka Soderberg, Cable's news director, who got a grant from the Fund for Investigative Journalism to look at the effects of ALEC on the Oregon legislature. This is among the last of those reports. Many well-known lawmakers and lawmakers-to-be, including Representatives John Huffman and Kim Thatcher, ALEC's Oregon Legislative Chair Gene Wisnett, gubernatorial candidate Dennis Richardson, and others, acknowledged their connection to and support of ALEC's mission. And records maintained by the Secretary of State and the Oregon Legislature show that they and their colleagues received many campaign contributions from ALEC-supporting companies, as well as voted for the passage of many pieces of ALEC model legislation. But how come most people had never heard of this public policy juggernaut before the shooting of Trayvon Martin in 2012? ALEC was created in the early 70s by the losers of the political battles of the 60s. Those conservatives wanted Barry Goldwater.
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
And Ronald Reagan.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
And when they backed Republican Richard Nixon in the early 70s,
people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
He not only ended up creating several government agencies, including the Environmental Protection Agency, but he was eventually toppled by Watergate. Not exactly the best decade for conservative ideology. So, after those humiliations, and with the help of then-multimillionaires Charles and David Koch, conservatives got smart. In 1973, a host of now well-known political names, Tommy Thompson, Henry Hyde, John Kasich, and Jesse Helms, helped form ALEC. By the early 80s, those same conservatives, on behalf of a Reagan Federalism Task Force, were regularly speaking to their congressional colleagues in hearings on ALEC interests like tax policy. Before the end of the decade, Reagan's task force morphed, and cabinet-level task forces on those and other social policy issues began to sprout. By the 1990s, those task forces had morphed again into what ALEC calls freestanding think tanks on every aspect of American life. Today, ALEC has proved to be a formidable force in public policy. Membership fee for business is high. In 2014, a corporate membership can cost as much as $25,000. But after businesses are on board, ALEC appeals to the two weak spots of many politicians, ego and money. Legislators can join ALEC for just $50 a year, and in exchange for the chance to rub elbows with very powerful CEOs three times a year, at lavish all-expense-paid conferences for them and their families, legislators sit in closed-door meetings with those same CEOs and agree to take business-benefiting draft legislation back to their state capitals to be made into real law. Real law, like the high-profile Stand Your Ground, which precipitated the killing of Trayvon Martin, and Arizona's SB 1070, the so-called Show Me Your Papers law.
They have three key areas where they work. Number one, in suppressing the vote.
That's John Nichols. He's been covering ALEC for The Nation magazine. He was talking about ALEC to the watchdog ALEC Exposed in 2011.
They push model voter ID legislation that would make it harder for millions, in fact tens of millions, of Americans to cast ballots. Two, they are very critical of initiatives and referendums, particularly those passed by citizens to, say, raise the minimum wage, create a living wage. Finally, and this is perhaps their key area of work in recent years, they are the most aggressive promoters of clearing away barriers for corporations and wealthy people to spend whatever they want to win elections.
ALEC calls itself bipartisan, and in fact, many Democrats do vote in favor of ALEC legislation, although that's not something they highly publicize. Of the more than 40 ALEC bills introduced into the Oregon legislature since 2011, 33 Oregon Democrats have voted in support of them. ALEC has had unparalleled success with getting legislators to support and pass its model bills. It does that in part through a PR effort to deflect criticism of its lobbying work by claiming that it is no different from other organizations like the National Council of State Legislators. ALEC's legislative chair for Oregon, Gene Wisnett, defended what he called similarities between ALEC and NCSL in a conversation with cable reporters Mike Klepfer and Yana Maximova during ALEC's spring conference in Kansas City this year.
So would you say that ALEC is essentially just a free market version of NCSL?
Yeah, it's more, and it's conservative members. More conservative members come here and exchange ideas, what's been successful, what didn't work, what may work. And then I have to consider, is that worth my time and effort to try to push it in Oregon. It's a good, you know, it's no different than NCSL, except you got more conservatives here.
Right.
And the connection with the private is it's no different than every day in Salem.
But in fact, there are key differences. For one, ALEC has corporate leaders and members who vote on bills behind closed doors, while NCSL does not. Also, almost all of ALEC's legislative leaders are Republican, while NCSL's leadership is strictly bipartisan.
The difference that between ALEC and NCSL is not only does NCSL actually do a lot more in the way of collecting information as a resource for the public.
Rick Henderson is the editor of the magazine Carolina Journal. The publication has done a number of reports about ALEC.
But NCSL's position largely is that if there's a dispute about whether power should be wielded at the federal or the state level, NCSL defers to the state level, but also NCSL wants the states to have plenty of power. It's not a limited government organization. It still likes for state legislatures to be very, very active in people's lives. And an interesting distinction between the two groups is that ALEC is entirely funded by either dues for members or from corporate contributions, while NCSL gets about 2/3 of its budget from taxpayers.
Cable reached out several times to NCSL spokespeople over the course of this reporting effort. No one from NCSL had responded to Cable by airtime. But regardless of that, NCSL's strength lies in the fact it has been historically much more open about its work and its membership than has been ALEC. And that makes it completely different from ALEC, no matter how much ALEC claims they're the same. But ALEC is definitely different from NCSL in the commitments it extracts from legislators to do its work. According to a 2013 interview between Lauren Windsor and Representative John Adams, ALEC's Ohio legislative chairman, the main responsibility of ALEC's state chair is to recruit new ALEC members and get current members to reenlist.
I do my job, seeing to it that members of our caucus are aware of ALEC, to recruit members as they come in and reenlist those members, because it's just a two-year membership, and I couldn't do that alone without my legislative aide coordinating everything. It doesn't take away from the duties of what I need to do as a legislator, and it doesn't take away from his duties to see to it that the constituents' needs are met.
Adams says ALEC's needs don't supersede his responsibility as a government servant. But the Guardian of London reported last year that among a trove of documents it obtained was a draft agreement prepared by ALEC that proposed that each of its 50 state legislative chairs should be required to put the interests of ALEC first. Gene Wisnett is ALEC's state chair for Oregon. Cable reached out to Mr. Wisnett's office for comment on this agreement. By airtime, we had not received a response. Because ALEC's main focus is what it calls a free market, limited government, regulation-free environment, it and its task forces have created model legislation that it says puts more power into the hands of the citizen. Whether it was Arizona's SB 1070, which gave the state the power to detain the undocumented, to the colloquially titled Monsanto Protection Act here in Oregon that prevented local governments from disallowing chemical companies from planting genetically modified seed. Although those bills have led to huge profits for gun manufacturers, commercial prisons, and agrofirms, it's not entirely clear how those policies have helped small business or the working class. In 2009, Wikipedia and Common Cause identified more than 200 of America's largest corporations as members of ALEC. After George Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin, dozens of ALEC corporate members dropped their memberships. Then, in 2013, the social justice organization Color of Change outed many of the remaining members in a letter-writing campaign. Cable talked with a spokesperson for Color of Change in 2012.
When we first started this campaign towards the end of last year, most people didn't really know what ALEC was or what it did. And at the same time, I think many of the corporations that had been supporting ALEC had gotten involved to advance their own business interests through ALEC, but weren't necessarily supportive or even aware of the full range of policies that ALEC supported. And so we began reaching out to companies to make sure they knew what they were supporting through ALEC and to give them a chance to reconsider their relationship and act before calling them out publicly.
The exodus of corporate backers led ALEC to create the Prodigal Son Project. According to the book of Luke, chapter 15, and beginning at verse 11, the story goes that a father gives two of his sons an inheritance. The younger son wastes his fortune and ends up essentially homeless. But his father, rather than admonishing his irresponsible child, welcomes him back. Alec is comparing the companies that left it to the foolish younger son. But they may not be so foolish. Last week, Common Cause reported that more than 90 companies have left Alec since 2011, and big names continue to fall away. On August 19, 2014, CNET reported that Microsoft was ending its relationship with Alec. According to Common Cause, Microsoft's announcement was sent to the Sustainability Group, a Boston-based socially responsible investment firm that had questioned Microsoft's Alec membership. Microsoft is a proponent of renewable energy. Alec is not. KBOO contacted Alec to request comment on Microsoft's departure. Alec's chief of public affairs, William Meyerling, referred KBOO to a link to a Bloomberg article that explained Microsoft's departure. But Mr. Meyerling also said in his email that, quote, there is no such thing as the Prodigal Son Project. Ed Pilkington, the person who originally reported on the release of the Alec board report, accurately reported that the project does not exist. Nearly every substantial article reported it incorrectly, unquote. Ed Pilkington is chief correspondent for London's The Guardian newspaper and lead reporter on Alec. So, Mr. Pilkington, does the Prodigal Son Project exist, or is it, according to Mr. Meyerling, not something that exists?
Well, all I can say is that we obtained documents, Alec's own documents. These are not documents we invented. They are documents produced by internal Alec employees. And one key document that we obtained and published last December was one in which the organization listed 40 major companies, including companies such as Coca-Cola, that had been a major source of their funding in the past, but had broken off ties with Alec in recent months. And it listed them, making clear it wanted to get those companies back as members. And at the very top of that document, the name of the document is put in clear print, the Prodigal Son Project. Now, whether that was an official project, or whether it was just some snappy title one of the Alec officials came up with, I don't know. But I think the significance of this remains, which is that Alec was clearly so concerned about the loss of these major backers that it was prepared to put a list together of them under the title The Prodigal Son Project, signifying to me that they had some financial and internal problems which they were seeking to address.
In addition, The Guardian reports that Alec has lost more than 400 of its 1,800 total legislative members since 2011.
You know, in the wake of the Trayvon Martin furore, many of those big donors dropped off. What we don't really know is whether they've managed to fill that hole and whether the Prodigal Son Project has worked, whether corporations have come back on board. There doesn't seem to be much evidence that they have come back on board, so I think it's fair to assume that Alec is still in some degree of difficulty.
Charities and nonprofits organized under Section 501c3 of the tax code are tax exempt, but Alec's charitable status lets its corporate members write off their Alec membership dues and costs as tax-deductible charitable contributions. Alec faced a host of challenges to that status, so much so that Alec seems to be getting ready for an IRS audit, according to a December 2012 article in Bloomberg by Jonathan Saland. To head off the audit, internal Alec documents show the organization has been discussing forming a nonprofit organized under Section 501c4 of the tax code. According to Alec Executive Director Ron Schaeberle, this initiative, officially known as Alec Now and unofficially known as the Jeffersonian Project, will allow Alec to continue operating and take over activities illegal for a 501c3 charity. Again, Ed Pilkington.
One of the big criticisms that Alec faced was that it was blurring the lines between sort of public service non-voluntary work and political work. And yes, that's where the tax thing comes in, because they were benefiting from tax write-off as essentially a sort of charitable organization. And yet the work that they're doing was fundamentally political, because it's designed to influence the policies and legislation of state politicians on behalf of big business in America. You know, and you can't get much more political than that.
And that effort to change its tax status appears to be part of something even larger. Jessica Mason reported for PR Watch in July that the Jeffersonian Project is actually part of an ALEC effort to amend the U.S. Constitution. Mason says that ALEC is pushing for a constitutional convention so states can introduce a balanced budget amendment. By changing its tax status, ALEC can more directly lobby its members and state legislatures to support resolutions for balanced budget amendments in their respective states, such as House Joint Resolution 8 that was recently introduced in Utah. It would be under less scrutiny as a 501c4 to do such lobbying than it currently is as a 501c3. Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution says that 2/3 of the states can trigger a convention to propose amendments, which then must be ratified by 3/4 of the states. So far, she says 24 out of the 34 necessary states have called for a constitutional convention to create a balanced budget amendment. In the past 7 months, 12 states have proposed such resolutions, in most cases sponsored by ALEC members, and 6 of those measures have passed. But there are 2 problems with this plan. First, a balanced budget amendment would prevent the government from deficit spending for crises such as recessions and natural disasters. It would drastically cut the government's ability to collect taxes and pay out retirement benefits. Secondly, and more important, a constitutional convention has never been triggered under Article 5, nor has one been held since 1787. And there is nothing that dictates that constitutional conventions must be issue-specific. That means there is no limitation on what could be changed, meaning we have no idea how different our country could look with the direct influence of corporations that didn't exist 228 years ago. Finally, ALEC's website says ALEC was formed because a nonpartisan group of conservative state lawmakers believed, among other things, that government closest to the people was fundamentally more effective, more just, and a better guarantor of freedom. The ALEC philosophy is apparently about to be applied to the next layers of government below the states. The American City-County Exchange is the ALEC model drilling down to city councils and county commissioners. Right now, municipalities are fighting states against laws passed by state legislatures that communities object to. The fight in Southern Oregon against GMO crops was an ALEC story KABU featured in its second report. The ACCE's mission will likely be to blunt that local opposition to states by seducing local government leaders and their families with the same trips, spas, and meals that have attracted state colleagues while in the background supporting PACs that donate to the campaigns of those local lawmakers. And one resource the ACCE, like ALEC, may draw on is Oregon's Cascade Policy Institute. In November 2013, the Oregonian reported that the Center for Media and Democracy discovered $1.4 million in donations to the Cascade Policy Institute, which came from Virginia-based Donors Trust between 2008 and 2011. Donors Trust, in turn, received nearly $5 million during roughly the same period from Charles and David Koch. ALEC has worked with the Cascade Policy Institute for research assistance supporting state-focused model legislation. Its former director, Todd Wynn, is currently the director of ALEC's Energy, Environment, and Agriculture Task Force. So it's reasonable to assume that ACCE may turn to the Cascade Policy Institute for the same kind of help at the village, town, city, and county levels. And when they do, how will the Association of Oregon Counties or the League of Oregon Cities, groups that are intimately involved with the lives of every Oregonian through the laws they help write, how will they react when ACCE starts to woo? Kevin Toon, who is the communications director for the League of Oregon Cities, told me that he was told by LOC's legislative director, Craig Honeyman, that the League of Oregon Cities hasn't heard of ACCE and has no plans to interact with ACCE. Meanwhile, Laura Cleland, the communications director for the Association of Oregon Counties, told me by email that, quote, "We have not had any direct contact with ACCE or ALEC and have only heard third hand through questions such as yours that there may be an effort such as you describe. We are not aware of any county commissioners who are working with ACCE." Unquote. It should be noted that many of the legislators who support ALEC model legislation aren't doing it just for the food or the trips or the accommodations. To believe that would be to underestimate professional, savvy, and career politicians who simply have a view of the role of government that isn't the same as what a significant part of the population believes. These people aren't evil, they just think differently. But without question, they are working hard on a version of America that other part of the population simply won't stomach. and underestimating them is something that part of the population simply can't afford. You can hear all of KBOO's reports on the American Legislative Exchange Council at kboo.org. The KBOO News Director is Jenka Soderberg. I'm Don Merrill.